morning, good afternoon. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Atlantic Business Spotlight. This is Kathleen Sutherland on behalf of kcsutherland.com, and today I'm coming to you from Albert County, the birthplace of Canada's 11th Prime Minister, R.B. Bennett, and on the site of the Albert County Museum, which is a host of a historical procession of colorful characters such as pioneers, artisans, explorers, shipbuilders, farmers, and a few charlatans, and even one convicted axe murderer. I'm here today with Dan Ross, the manager curator. Dan, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for having me.
Dan, as the manager curator of the Albert County Museum, we're looking at a long period of history. These grounds have been in use in these buildings. Can you just take us through a little bit of where the story begins?
Well, as far as English settlement goes, you're looking at the mid-1800s when this was known as the Shire Town of the Albert County area, old term for capital of the area. It had its own government, basically, within the province of New Brunswick.
And what did that look like at that time?
Oh, you would have had quite an extensive framework of business and homes running from where we are right now all the way down to the riverbank. There was docks down there, houses, shipbuilding going on. It was quite the commerce. Everything that from lumber to hay was being shipped out of the area here by small ships, bringing them out into the Bay of Fundy onto larger ships, transporting them down to Boston and New York.
I think a lot of us would be surprised to hear about pirates in the region of Albert County.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a history, a great history here in Albert County. You know, before the English settlements, it was the French who populated this area. And of course, we all know about the expulsion of the Acadians in 1755, but a lot of people don't realize that, or, you know, around 1758, there was actually a pirate, it depends who you talk to, whether he was a pirate. If you speak to the French government, he was a privateer. If you speak to the British, he was a pirate. So, you know, it depends what side of the line that you're on.
It always does.
That's right. So this was Joseph Broussard, who was also known as his privateer name as Beausoleil. He conducted raids with his four sons against the British to kind of disrupt what they were doing at the time, which was basically burning villages and the expulsion of the Acadians at that time. So, I mean, he's in his own right a hero and a pirate.
Depending on who you ask.
That's right, of the Bay of Fundy, that's right.
And is there a representation of Beausoleil here that we can find? Is his story told on the grounds?
We tell the story verbally on the grounds. We don't have a lot of information as far as artifacts goes for Mr. Beausoleil. But, you know, if you go onto the website, there's an interesting picture of Mr. Beausoleil in a very contemplative state, holding a rifle in his hand and I guess maybe planning his next move.
It's another great example of how history truly is determined by the people who win.
And
our review of it and our understanding of events can be colored and tailored. And we see this with the Tom Collins story as well.
It's always the people who win the war, the side that wins the war, that dictates what history is.
How do we mitigate that if we're trying to understand our own history?
We have to remember both sides of the story. I mean, and this is a perfect example. I mean, we have the British that were coming in here under orders of the Crown in order to expel the Acadians' population from here. And to the British, at that time, the Acadian population were the bad ones, right? But, you know, to France and to the people of Acadia that were here, it was an unjust, uprooting of a whole population to send them someplace else. And, you know, it's just, you think about that and about what happens today and how there's genocides that happen in other countries around the world. And somehow you feel that they can be linked together. And the tragedy back then is just as severe as tragedies that you hear about today.
And it's, again, that idea of the world out there and the global community. And I think it's easy for us to forget, you know, what has happened on our own land and what could happen if we don't understand the events of the past and learn what that means in terms of our present reality.
That's right. And in the history of it, if I take a lighter side of it, you know, I can also say that you learn from both sides. When the French settlers were here on the shores of the Petitcodiac, they farmed differently than the English did. They built a series of dikes and farmed mostly down on the marshes, where when the English settled here, they went through the terrible, laborsome, cumbersome job of clearing trees and clearing land and boulders out of the earth to try to farm in fields that, you know, maybe didn't grow as well as what the French population was doing when they were here.
Always something to learn from the people who were there before us.
Oh, for sure.
Now we're seeing in the present day, the Albert County Museum is made up from 9 buildings spread out over 6 acres. So what do we have that's still remaining in terms of buildings?
Still remaining on their original foundations, we have the tax office that was here, as well as a records office, your community hall, which is interesting in itself that they built it as a community hall. Usually in communities like this, they'll build the church. And as a congregation grows, they have to build a larger church and the old church turns into a community hall.
Right.
This was never a church. They built it especially for a community hall. So it's interesting in that aspect. You have the courthouse, which is actually the second courthouse here. This was built in 1904. The first courthouse was destroyed in a fire that swept through the shire town. Right. So this one was rebuilt for the grand sum of $5,000.
In 1904.
1904, that's right. And then you have the original jail, the county jail that's here. And then up behind it, we have the exhibition hall. And, of course, the old captain's house.
Okay, quite the collection of space. So tell me, in the community center, so this was built to be a placeholder in the community, what types of events would have been taking place? How would the community have gathered here back in the day?
This would have been their entertainment. This would have been their Friday night or Saturday night going out and meeting with the whole community, and there'd be music played on the stage and probably some plays that were being performed and everything, right? They were just coming in and having a good time and keeping the community together as a whole.
And it's kind of interesting that the courthouse, where there would be not so much of a good time happening, is really only just a few steps away from where we're sitting right now in the community hall.
That's right. And the courthouse is a real gem of a building. When you go in there, it's the courthouse as it was when it was built. And the acoustics in there are just phenomenal. We've started doing a concert series in there. And, you know, the musicians are just loving it. The acoustics are so good.
So that's an interesting point. So if we're looking at sort of the modern day business angle of it, and I will like to hear a few more stories from back in
sure.
the day, but part of your job as the manager and curator of this is bringing a place together where business meets history, meets tourism. So what would you say is your primary role in running this as a business now?
I think it goes back to the customer service and giving the customer a real experience. Not just coming in and paying a few dollars to go see a museum and to see some artifacts and exhibits, but to actually come in here and build some stories about what's going on around it and give them a true experience. And when they leave here, they say, "Wow, I didn't know that this happened down here." You know, whether it's a story of the shipping or of R.B. Bennett, our 11th Prime Minister, right, or of a terrible axe murder by Tom Collins.
Okay, let's go there. Let's go there right now.
Everybody wants Tom Collins.
What is the story behind Tom Collins?
Oh, Tom Collins. Tom was a young man of about 21 or 22 years old that came over from England. He was an immigrant. And he met up with Father McCully, who was a Catholic priest that had 5 or 6 churches around the area. And the person who helped Father McCully, or took care of him, cooked his meals and made sure his rectory was in top shape, was his second cousin, Mary Ann McCully. So Tom Collins was hired on by Father McCully as his all-around handyman around the rectory. And unfortunately, as the story goes, Father McCully was away at one of his other churches, and when he returned after searching for Mary Ann McCully, he eventually found her out in the woodshed, and she had been hit on the back of the head with an axe, and her throat was cut from ear to ear. And she was abandoned inside the woodshed, and Tom was nowhere to be found. So they eventually caught up with Tom up near St. Stephen, up around that area.
He had been on the run?
Yeah, he had been on the run, but, you know, it's there's stories behind, you know, whether Tom was actually guilty of the crime or not. Regardless, they caught him. They brought him back here. There was three trials that took place, which set Canadian precedent for law at that time, where you have the double indemnity clause that you can't be tried over and over again for the same crime. So the first trial was, he was found guilty, but it was overturned by the Supreme Court of New Brunswick. The second trial ended up in a hung jury, and the third trial ended up with a guilty verdict. This took about a year and a half that he spent in the county jail here, and he was found guilty on that third trial. They built the gallows right behind the jail, and he was hung there till he was dead and buried just off to the side of the jail.
So he's still there today?
No, actually, in around 1966, they took him out of the his grave there and brought him down to a proper cemetery when this place was actually deemed as a museum. You can't really have a grave on a museum anymore, I guess.
Right.
Or at that time. That.
So three trials. So there must have really been some conflicting evidence. What do you, if you know the story, from where you're sitting today, what's your personal opinion?
Well, you know, it can go 50-50 sometimes, but I don't think that Tom was running guilty. I think that Tom was running scared. I think he was a man that was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And he had this crime pinned upon him. And I think he died an innocent man. Even the priest that came over from Dorchester, who was, I mean, this was the only hanging that ever happened in this area.
Right, I was going to ask because they built the gallows just for
exactly,
him.
Exactly, but over in Dorchester, they've had numerous hangings over at the penitentiary. So the priest that was over in Dorchester came over here to take care of Tom in the last months of his life. And right to the time that Tom was walking that long walk to go to the gallows to be hung, he never confessed to the crime. And the priest says in his testimonies and his stories that usually the man who is guilty will testify on the way to the gallows to help, you know, if there's a chance of saving your soul.
Right, that's when you're going to try and take
that's
it.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, I think that Tom was innocent of his of the crime, and something tells me he's still around this area today.
And what makes you say that?
Oh, I go into the jail and I can feel the hair on the back of my neck stand up sometimes, and I get the chill up my spine. And I've even had employees here that have, you know, one employee was refused to come to work this summer because he didn't want to work at the jail, and another one bolted out of the jail after something happened and actually never came back.
And are these like daytime or nighttime incidents? Is it just a creepy vibe in there no matter when you stop by?
Yeah, personally for me, it's just kind of, it's a constant presence.
Right.
Yeah. So I usually try to downplay it when I go in just by saying hello to whoever's there. And, you know, so I don't think that they're malicious. I think that they're just lost.
I think that's really interesting. And and you were saying you had the Paranormal Society poking around up here. And what did they find? Anything conclusive?
Well, I think they found that there's most likely a presence in the jail. But there wasn't anything hard and fast that they came out with. But they said that, you know, they were getting some kind of readings up there.
So this is just one of the stories that creates the sort of the foundational experience for the client or the guest of the Albert County Museum.
That's right. Part of the other exhibits that we have here that roll along with the experience would be the County of Heroes, which is our newest exhibit. That goes along with our Victory Cannons. That goes along with Cyrus Peck, who was one of the original guys with R.B. Bennett, that is from Hopewell Cape, and Cyrus is the won the Victoria Cross during World War I. So the new exhibit is really all about the cannons and about the boys who went off to war during World War I to fight for our freedom. And we've constructed a World War I trench up in the exhibition hall in order to tell this story.
So it's like an interactive exhibit.
Exactly, exactly. And there's stories inside stories with the exhibit. So it's about the cannons, it's about Cyrus Peck getting the Victoria Cross, and it's about the boys that gave their lives, right? And it's about the victory cannons that are at the entrance to the museum, which a lot of people don't know were captured by boys of Hopewell Cape in Albert County during the Battle of Vimy Ridge. Those are actually German cannons that were spoils of war here.
Okay. So what's involved in sort of putting an exhibit like this together? And I'm curious, World War I wasn't that long ago, so is there still descendants of some of these people? Is there an aspect of reaching out to people who are still around and gathering their photos, their stories?
It's really interesting, you know, to get an exhibit like this going. And, you know, I didn't have my... I'm not going to take credit for getting this exhibit up and running. This was actually, you know, the president of the association, Stuart, he worked tireless hours, as well as Dawn. She just put so many hours into this. And I just happened to be at the right place at the right time to get the exhibit up and running. But as far as descendants, yes, there are still descendants here of these boys that fought. And as a matter of fact, since the exhibit has been open, I've made contact with people in Ontario who are descendants of people down here that fought in the war, and they've sent me some artifacts of, you know, their great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather who fought, right, who was from Hopewell Cape. So it's quite interesting that way to, you know, once the exhibit was up and running, it still continues to grow.
So Dan, in this time, in this day and age, the age of the internet, where so much of the focus is on the world out there and the global community, you know, and reaching out and experiencing things outside of our front door in a much larger extent, how important is it to have things like the Albert County Museum, where really representing our roots, our history here at home?
Remembering our history is so important in this day and age. I mean, like you mentioned, the technological age that we're in right now. Everything is so available on the internet, and that is something that we're looking at here at the museum, as far as cataloging everything and making it available, right, for the world to see, right. However, it's very important to be able to come to a museum like this and see the artifacts with your own eyes, and, you know, perhaps touch something that is 100 or 200 years old, right, and hear stories about it. The information age, information technology is fantastic, but there's nothing like seeing something firsthand with your own eyes.
And it is an interesting cross-section too, as you mentioned, bringing like history to the internet while bringing the local people to the history.
Absolutely.
Here in these buildings.
That's right, yes.
So how do we adapt? How has the museum had to adapt and sort of bring in technology as part of the presentation and the marketing for this?
Well, you know, of course, there's always the web pages and your Facebook and Instagrams and your Twitter feeds and things like that, right? But we have to take it a step up with this. We have to be becoming more into the digital age with being able to have somebody from Ontario or for somebody in British Columbia to be able to access some information on a particular artifact that we have here over the internet and go in and see write-ups about, you know, just one particular item, let alone the thousands that we have in here, right? So it is a huge undertaking for us to put everything out there digitally, but it is something that we're striving to move forward with and to actually achieve.
And I'm wondering, what is the main audience here? So I'm assuming that the summer is the busy time here.
Yes.
At the Albert County Museum. So are we seeing locals coming and stopping and exploring what's here? Or is it mostly drive-by tourists on the way to Fun Day? Who's coming?
Well, you know what? In the summer months, it really is a mishmash of people that come through. It is a lot of tourists, but we do get the locals coming in here. And as a matter of fact, because of the size of this museum, when people think of a museum, they think of one building.
Right.
Right. But this is actually nine buildings set upon a 6-acre compound. Right. So they drive by and they see the cannons out front and the memorial to R.B. Bennett. And they think that that is the extent of what the museum is. But for the people who actually drive in, a lot of them are very surprised to see the size of it. And a lot of people, even locals, say, you know, I've driven by here so many times, And I didn't realize what a gem we have here in our own backyards.
And I suppose part of that adaptation in bringing locals in, as you mentioned, like music series taking place at the courthouse and starting to host like different types of performances, which then revitalizes these old buildings and brings new life into them.
That's right, yes. And I mean, the music series that we're putting in, the concerts at the courthouse, are a wonderful start to get people coming in here and seeing the museum and everything that we have to offer. But I also like to mention that, you know, we've had concerts in the past with people like Stan Carew and people. So it's also here at the community hall, we've had concerts in here, and we'll continue to have some concerts in here too. So, yeah, keeping people entertained, I think, is very important to getting them to turn in.
Yes.
And see the building, right? Even as much as this summer when the tourists are coming through, want to create a family atmosphere, not just somebody who's interested in a museum, but, you know, for a family to turn in and with a couple of kids, to entertain the kids too, right? I mean, what kid, 12-year-old kid, wants to spend the afternoon going through artifacts in the museum?
And reading the plaques.
And reading the plaques, right? You have to have a little bit more than just the plaques and the artifacts. You have to have some games and some activities and, you know, a barbecue or whatever in order to attract the family in here.
And that is so important, I feel, because children and young people, we do get disconnected from our history,
right.
and it's a building block for our identity, and especially in these days where we're looking at so many young people leaving New Brunswick.
Right.
And yes. I feel like part of having a connection to our history and having a connection to the land that we live in, the communities that have been here and are continuing to evolve here, is a big part of keeping families here.
Yes. One of the things that I love about the job is just recently we had a heritage fair here, and there was the Anglophone East district. There was probably 80 or 90 kids, middle school kids, that were here during this heritage fair, and I had a chance to bring all of these kids in different groups through the museum, and they have a love of history. They're here for the heritage fair, but they never saw the museum before. So it was really great to see when I was telling them stories about the museum and everything from the Tom Collins, everything from, you know, World War I and from R.B. Bennett, you could really see them connecting. And it was so great to see that the interest, you could see their eyes light up and, you know, almost their ears perking, listening to every piece of information that was given to them, because it wasn't just a story that was being told. It was something that they could see and look at, right, or touch. Right. And, you know, that tactile connection with something can be more important than just a story with dates and times.
Exactly. It's more of an experience.
That's right. Yeah. And that's really my drive is to make it the experience, whether it's for kids or for adults or, you know, mom and dad or for grandmother and grandfather. Right. It's to give them that customer experience when they come in here that they're actually... they're learning something or remembering something from the past, and, you know, it's really connecting with them.
And how does that play in with the guided tours that are going to be taking place around here this summer?
Well, I'm hoping to do 2 to 3 tours a day during the summer months. And I think that when I do a tour, it really does encompass, as a curator, a lot of aspects of the museum. So I just don't do the Tom Collins story. I just don't do the World War I stories. I try to incorporate everything together and tie things in as I go.
And the storytelling aspect is such a great way to translate history, you know, for a whole family. We can all hear a great story and
sure.
connect with that.
Yeah, and a great story in the sense of you're not sitting there and talking about, on June 1st in 1898 at the hour 6 o'clock, this happened. Right, it's not all about dates and years. It's about the story itself, right, and the storytelling part of it.
Do you find that children and adults react to the same parts of the story? Do they light up at the same moments, or is there a disconnect in the generations between what's more interesting and what's less interesting?
Well, it depends on the story, right? You know, you have to temper the Tom Collins story. You know, if you have a little boy and a little girl that's 8 or 9 years old, and you know, you don't really want to jump into the gruesome aspect of Tom Collins, right? And what happened to Marianne McCulley. You have to kind of temper it and make it easy. But there are times that you're telling the story and you can see mom and dad and the kids reacting at the same time to a different aspect of a story, right? Let me give you an example. Mom and dad, the kids, grandmother and grandfather, right? And you're talking about World War One. Well, grandmother and grandfather are remembering perhaps their parents.
Right.
Right, and their experiences from World War One.
Something they can actually have experience, have exactly, an association right? with. Yeah.
Where mom and dad are reacting to hearing stories from the grandmother and grandfather, right? And the kids might be hearing this for the first time.
Right.
Right. And so all three groups are reacting in different ways, but it's all to the same story.
That's a fascinating example of how history touches us on a multi-generational level. And that's what I love about any aspect of the community that brings together the whole family or all ages, even if it's not necessarily family, but where multi-generations of community are intermingling and talking with each other. I feel like this is an important part of what makes a community strong.
Absolutely. The big thing about history for me has always been, you know, you have to remember your past. You have to remember where your family has been and where society has been in the past and things that have happened in order to move forward in the future, to make sure that mistakes that were committed back then aren't repeated now. I mean, who wants to go through the World War One, the World War Two aspect again, right? Who wants to see that happen again? And even though, you know, now some people say, well, you know, have we really learned lessons? I mean, the things that are happening in the world today, I do believe that the history helps play out what happens today.
I personally, yes, I believe it's important to understand history in order to understand what's going on now, not just to, you know, prevent things from happening in the future, but even to have an understanding of how we got here and had to explain what's happening when we look around.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And in the case of what's happened here in the events on the Albert County Museum and the courthouse actually ended up setting a precedent in our legal system.
That's right. Exactly. I mean, there's loads of history that's come out of this Albert County area. It really truly was. I mean, it was a capital of this area, of this county. So things happened here that impacted not only Albert County, not only New Brunswick, but Canada and ultimately the world.
That's something I don't think we think about very often in this area, in the greater Moncton area. You know, the impact that we are having, especially in the Albert County specifically, having had an impact of significance in our country and on a global scale.
Well, you know, in World War One, more men enlisted per capita out of Albert County than anywhere else in Canada.
Why do you think that is?
I think it was just the community at the time and where their mindset was and where their patriotism was. Right? I don't know whether it was higher here than in Ontario, but the fact of the matter is, and the record shows, that more boys enlisted here, and again, per capita,
right,
than anywhere else in Canada. The percentage was higher.
Well, Dan, where can we stay on top of what is going on in the Albert County Museum this summer? Where can we find you online?
Oh, just do a search for Albert County Museum, and I think we've been getting hit so many times that if you look for the Albert County Museum, it's going to lead you to our Facebook page, it's going to lead you to our webpage, and, you know, by all means, come by and check out the Albert County Museum. I'd be happy to take people on to a tour, whether it's a couple of people or whether it's 10 people. I'm here for it.
And also keeping on top of what events are going on in terms of music and theater on the grounds as
exactly,
well.
Exactly, yes. The Facebook page is probably the best there. We're always updating the page and almost on a daily basis, whether it's for a concert or whether it's just for an interesting artifact that we find.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for taking time to speak with me today, for keeping history alive and bringing the community together here at the Albert County Museum.
It was my pleasure. Pleasure to meet you.
Thank you. Well, friends, having now had the chance to experience a guided tour hosted by the wonderful Dan Ross, manager curator here at the Albert County Museum, I can say with full confidence I recommend this. It is great, and it's mind-boggling the amount of thought, care that has been taken in preserving and enlivening these artifacts here on the grounds, and the storytelling, the immersion in the living history of Albert County. It's truly a gem and well worth your time to check out this summer. So again, my name is Kathleen Sutherland. This is Atlantic Business Spotlight. You can reach me by email at info@kcsutherland.com. And please check out my website, kcsutherland.com. We will see you soon.